ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ.
ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ.
ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ.
ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ.
ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 17, titled Punishment and Reward of Kali, Text Number 19. Kechit Vikalpa Vasana Ahurasmanam Atmanaha Devamanye Pare Karma స్వభావమపరే ప్రభుం. కేచిద్ వికల్పవసన ఆహురాత్మానమాత్మనః దైవమన్యే పరే కర్మ స్వభావమపరే ప్రభుం. కేచిద్ వికల్పవసన ఆహురాత్మానమాత్మనః దైవమన్యే పరే కర్మ స్వభావమపరే ప్రభుం. కేచిద్ వికల్పవసన ఆహురాత్మానమాత్మనః దైవమన్యే పరే కర్మ స్వభావమపరే ప్రభుం. Word to word translation. Kechit, some of them. Vikalpavasanaha, those who deny all kinds of duality. Ahu, declare. Atmanam, own self. Atmanaha, of the self. Daivam, superhuman. Anye, others. Apare, someone else. Karma, activity. Svabhavam, material nature. Apare, many other. Prabhum, authorities. Translation. Some of the philosophers who deny all sort of duality declared that one's own self is responsible for his personal happiness and distress. Others say that superhuman powers are responsible, while yet others say that the activity is responsible, and the gross materialists maintain that nature is the ultimate cause. So we'll read the translation responsibly. Some of the philosophers who deny all sort of duality declare that one's own self is responsible for his personal happiness and distress. Others say that superhuman powers are responsible. While yet others say that activity is responsible. And the gross materialists maintain that nature is the ultimate cause. Purport by A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada. As referred to above, philosophers like Jaimini and his followers establish that fruitive activity is the root cause of all distress and happiness, and that even if there is a superior authority, some superhuman powerful god or gods, he or they are also under the influence of fruitive activity because they reward result according to one's action. They say that action is not independent because action is performed by some performer. Therefore, the performer himself is the cause of his own happiness or distress. In the Bhagavad Gita 6.5, also it is confirmed that by one's mind, freed from material affection, one can deliver himself from the sufferings of material pangs. So one should not entangle oneself in matters by the mind's material affections. Thus, one's own mind is one's friend or enemy in one's material happiness and distress. Atheistic materialistic Sankhyas concludes that material nature is the cause of all causes. According to them, combinations of material elements are the cause of material happiness and distress, and disintegration of matter is the cause of freedom from all material pangs. Gautama and Kanada find that atomic combination is the cause of everything, and impersonalists like Ashtavakra discover that the spiritual effulgence of Brahman is the cause of all causes. But in the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord himself declares that he is the source of impersonal Brahman, and therefore he, the personality of Godhead, is the ultimate cause of all causes. It is also confirmed in the Brahma Samhita that Lord Krishna is the ultimate cause of all causes. So translation again, some of the philosophers who deny all sort of duality declares that one's own self is responsible for his personal happiness and distress. Others say that the superhuman powers are responsible, while yet others say that the activity is responsible, and the gross materialists maintain that nature is the ultimate cause. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamagyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahaganarukunathanitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sahaganalalita Shri Vishakhanitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpade Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Paditanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So here is a very interesting analysis. Who is the cause of our happiness and suffering? Because life is a combination of happiness and suffering. So this topic is very much relevant to all of us. In our personal life, if we are preaching to someone, if we are sharing to someone, this is very important. Who is the ultimate cause? Or whom to blame? Because if we have some problem, we are looking at an opportunity to blame someone. We say the blame game. In the outside world, we say it's a blame game because everyone wants to blame someone for something which have happened. So we have to blame someone. So this is a section of Bhagavatam, also in Bhagavad Gita. There is a section dealing with the blame game, whom to blame. So it is very interesting because we should know whom to blame. So Bhagavad Gita gives the answers, and also Bhagavatam we can see in this verse and in this section answers to this question. So here the analysis is given, giving different points. One point is, okay, let us blame the material nature. Some others say, let's blame the activity. Others say, let's blame the superior powers, maybe the superhuman powers. And yet others say, okay, let's blame ourselves. So, there's a combination of reasons that we can see. And according to one's consciousness, one would blame any one of these. So, we cannot say that everyone would blame the same thing. No. According to one's consciousness, this changes. Now, here we can see, referring to the most materialistic people, the conclusion is that the blame is always going to the material nature. So that is the theory of Jaimini. It is called Karma Mimamsa. So it is among the Shaddarshan, the six philosophical systems which are coming from Vedas. One of them is Karma Mimamsa, which is propounded by Jaimini. It is about the fruitive activity. So the world is full of fruitive activities. So even in Vedas, there are quite a bit of mention about fruitive activities of karma or karmakanda. Fruitive activity means we expect some fruit from our activity. So it is not uncommon in this material world. We can see that every day. It's a part of the daily life, right? So why people are working so hard? Because they are expecting some result. Otherwise there is no material life whatsoever. So Jaimini propounds this Karma Mimamsa, wherein it is mentioned that the activity is the superior cause. It's mentioned here, the fruitive activity is the root cause of all distress and happiness. So the cause, the ultimate cause is pointed towards the fruitive activity, the activity in itself. The karma is the cause of everything. The ultimate cause is karma. So interesting enough, in Srimad Bhagavatam, even Krishna uses Karma Mimamsa theory. Anyone remembers where it is? Where Krishna propounds Karma Mimamsa, yeah? Exactly. To Nanda Maharaj in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, just before Govardhan Leela. So, the residents of Vrindavan, they were about to perform Indra Puja. So, they were getting ready of everything, all paraphernalia, to worship Indra. And what is the system based on? Yes, it is based on the Vedas. Even though the residents of Vrindavan, they were worshipping Indra, it was based on Veda. It was based on it is based on Karmakanda in one sense. It's a Leela, so we don't say they are just Karmakandis, but the basis we can attribute to Karmakanda. Where, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Annad Bhavadi Bhutani, Parjanyat Anna Sambhavaha, Karmat Bhavadi, Parjanyo, sorry. What is the rest of Yajnat Bhavadi, Parjanyo, Yajna, sorry, that is the last one is Yajna, Karma Samudbhava. So, Yajnat Bhavadi, Parjanyo, Yajna, Karma Samudbhava. So, there we can see, that is, okay. Nanda Maharaj explained to little Krishna that why do we have to perform this sacrifice? Why do we have to worship Indra? Because he said, look at our cows. Look at our grains, which are produced by rain. Annad bhavanti bhutani. So, from grains, the living entities can sustain. So, Nanda Maharaj said, so the cause of parjanya, the cause of rain, is Indra, because Indra is the demigod irresponsible for Parjanya, irresponsible for rains. So we have to worship Indra in return. Because that is the agreement between the living entities and the demigods. It is given in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Right? It is mentioned. That is, in the beginning of the creation, there has been this agreement between the living entities and the demigods who are in control. That is, you worship the demigods and in return, they will provide us with all the necessities of life. So in that way, there is the possibility of material prosperity. So following in this footstep, Nanda Maharaj replied to Krishna. However, Krishna, He was very smart, and he actually replied, he actually contracted the arguments of Nanda Maharaj based on Jaimini's theory of karma mimamsa, where action is the root cause. So he actually mentioned a couple of points. The one of the prime philosophy he used was karma mimamsa, where he mentioned that activity is the ultimate cause. So suppose, it's a very interesting logic. So suppose, if we do perform some activity, we are meant to get some result, either good or bad. And who is responsible to award such kind of results? They are the demigods, the devatas. So it is a duty of the devatas to award results. And that is dependent on our activity. So in one sense, Krishna said that, look, if you perform one activity, then the demigods are duty bound to award the result accordingly. So then, who is the ultimate cause? Is it demigods or is it the activity in itself? So, Krishna said, no, it's the activity. So, activity is the ultimate cause, not the demigods. Because the demigods are bound by the activity. They don't have independence. So, Krishna pointed out, okay, so we don't have to really worship Indra. Because activity is the cause of the result. So, Indra is meant to award result independent of the, or dependent on the activity. So it looks like he doesn't have a free choice, but the activity is the cause and it is giving the result. So there, this was one of the reasons of Krishna proposing to Nanda Maharaj not to perform Indra Puja. So that is actually the viewpoint of many people. That is, if we are working hard, we must get the result. That's all. We are performing hard work, so we have to get the result. So many people are bound by this thought. So they make their career plan. Okay, in this 5 years, I'm going to work so much and I'm going to make so much of money. In 10 years, I'm going to have this property. I'm going to make this much bank balance. Okay, this, that, everything. A full plan for the whole life. But we know in reality that even though they might work hard, even they might work harder than a person who is richer, still the material opulence is not guaranteed. Is it right? It's a practical reality. That is, one can work hard. If the activity is the all cause, then why not activity bringing in all the results? You can perform the same activity. You can perform even more intensity, with more intensity, still the result is not necessarily in proportion. This is bewildering. This is bewildering for the materialistic people. Because the activity and the result are not necessarily in proportion. Sometimes one may get the result, sometimes one may not get the result. Sometimes it could be in proportion, sometimes it is not in proportion. So this is one of the puzzling situation in this world. And those who propose God consciousness, they say, what's going on? Who is the cause? So if they had to blame someone, they say, blame God. Okay, God is the cause of everything. So this is one aspect of this. That is, whom to blame. One is the activity. But we can see from practical reality that activity is not the ultimate cause. Ultimate cause in itself. Then, next interesting point is that is given as the last point, that is, the material nature is the ultimate cause. So as it is mentioned, that the combination of matter, the chemical reactions, that is the ultimate cause of everything. If you have pain, it is because of some kind of combinations of chemicals in your body. Right? That is the most postmodern recent theory. That is, whatever happens to you, your emotions, which can be traced back to some kind of chemical activity. Your intelligence could be traced back to some kind of chemical reactions. So anything happens to you, it is nothing but a combination of chemicals. So basically, if you see the Darwinian evolution, it is based on this theory. That is, everything is coming from matter and everything is evolving through chemical reactions. And some scientists, we were discussing, you know, two days before this point, that is, some of the scientists, they are so foolish. that they, this was a story a few decades back, they said, now life is not a secret anymore. We almost know everything about life. It is a complicated chemical reaction. We are not claiming that we know everything, but we are almost there. It's just a matter of time. We would know everything about life. So life is not a secret anymore. So this happened a few decades back. But still, the post-data check, as Srila Prabhupada said, it continues. No one has ever understood what is life. It was interesting. We were discussing about one scientist, Georgi, very famous Nobel laureate. He wanted to know about life. So first he started studying about the microorganisms in the environment. So from there he studied, you know, when many of the scientists, when they study means they spend, you know, close to a decade in studying all this kind of thing. So he spent quite a few years in studying microorganisms within the environment. Then he understood that I can't really know about life just by studying them. From there he actually moved to study of cells. So understanding that, okay, by studying cell I could know something about life. So he spent again another quite a few years about studying about cell. Then he realized that cells are not the ultimate thing, so I had to go more, deeper. So he went into studying proteins, because there are different proteins which are, you know, creating different parts of our body. So he started studying about proteins. So again he spent a few years on studying about proteins. Then after studying a few years about proteins, he understood that proteins are not the end of the story. We had to go even deeper. And then he realized we had to actually study about the atoms. So then he started studying about the atoms. So atoms means, you know, there are more fundamental than atoms. So he started studying about electrons. So in one sense, he started from the living organisms in the environment, and finally he ended up in electrons. And finally, to analyze electrons and its, you know, subatomic behavior, he had to study quantum mechanics. So at the end of his life, he made a very profound statement. He said, you know, he actually retraced his past. He was thinking about his past. He said, you know, I started with this living organisms. From there I moved to cells, from there to proteins, from there to atoms and electrons, and kind of ended up in quantum mechanics. He said, I have actually studied so many things, but in my search only one thing slipped out of through my fingers, and that was life. So he said, it looks like I had to retrace my life. I had to retrace my path. So there were many scientists who actually came to this conclusion that just by materialistic approach, one cannot understand what is life. So that is this, as it's mentioned here, atheistic, materialistic Samkhyas conclude that material nature is the cause of all causes. According to them, combinations of material elements are the cause of material happiness and distress. So this is the post-modern theory. That is, chemical combinations are everything, including emotions, including intelligence, including life, including name it, whatever. Everything is just a matter of chemical combinations. So, as the followers of Bhagavad philosophy, we do deny that, because we understand chemical combination cannot bring in life. Just chemical has not bring forth life whatsoever. There is no such examples. There are no such examples. So always there is life behind life. So Srila Prabhupada wrote the famous book, Life Comes from Life. So that is the essence. That is, life cannot be manufactured by chemical reactions. But it is, so this modern theory is not something very new as such as we might think, but that is coming from the Samkhya philosophy. That is, everything is just a chemical combination. Now there are two more aspects we can discuss. One is about the superhuman powers. Are they responsible for all activities? So one point here is, are devatas responsible for our happiness and suffering? So the whole astrology is based on that, right? That is, all superhumans, the devatas have influence on our karma. on the happiness and suffering what we are getting. Because according to the astrology, the planets are influencing our happiness and distress. And there are the deities, there are the devatas who are responsible for each planet. So the devatas are controlling our life. In other words, the devatas are controlling our happiness and distress through the agency of different planets. So that is one way of looking at it. So looks like they have a hand in our happiness and distress. Now that reason, you know, there is the whole Navagraha Puja, you know, the nine planets, planetary systems, and if you go to some temples, especially in India, if you go to Dandenong, you can see the whole, the Navagraha Puja. People are circumambulating the Navagrahas, the nine planetary systems, so that all the ill effects are removed. All the sufferings are removed from their lives. So, it can look like, for some of them, it looks like, according to their consciousness, it looks like they are the cause of their happiness and suffering. So which is Vedic in one sense, which is Vedic because devatas have their role in our happiness and suffering. But we don't attribute that as the ultimate cause. Now here, towards the final, Ashtavakra is the propounder of impersonalist philosophy. So Ashtavakra says, no, the ultimate cause is impersonal Brahman. So we have to come to the platform of Jnana where one can understand that the ultimate reason is kind of Brahman. Brahman is the ultimate cause. Because even though there is this creation, even though this wonderful universe is being created, ultimately the cause is Brahman. So, Sarvam Kalvidam Brahman. That is, everything is emanation of Brahman. Everything is constituted by Brahman. So that is the theory of Ashtavakra and other impersonalists. So they attribute everything to Brahma Jyoti as the cause. So from, yes, it has its meaning because Brahman is one of the natures of the Supreme Lord. So we do accept Brahman as a cause, but we don't say it as the ultimate cause. So here, the ultimate cause, we say, what is the ultimate cause? Is Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that is Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachidananda Vigraha Anadiradhar Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam. So the cause of all causes is nothing but the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. So now the actual problem comes. So we refuse different causes. That is this purport, we can refuse different things as the ultimate cause. We can refuse the material nature. We can refuse the activity. We can refuse the supreme, you know, some kind of superhuman in the form of devatas. We can even refuse one's own self. Then we can point completely on to the Supreme Lord Krishna. He is the ultimate cause. So the question arises, our happiness and suffering, are they based on Krishna's will? So that is the blame actually. That is the blame of many of the atheistic people. That is, if there is a God, why there is suffering? Correct? We say Krishna is the ultimate cause of all causes. This is the purport. The conclusion is that Krishna is the cause of all causes. So, why there is suffering? Why God is so cruel that He is controlling our happiness and distress? Why He is not giving all happiness? Why there is suffering? So, to understand this point, okay, Bhagavad Gita again explains this point very nicely in the 4th chapter, 5th chapter. There are verses analyzing this point. When we see who is the actual cause of our happiness and suffering. So again, the causes are divided into three. Who is the actual performer of an activity? Who is actually performing an activity? Because one place Krishna says that the material nature is the cause. Material nature is the cause. Prakrite kriyamanani punay karmani sarvasah ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. So what does that mean? One who is bewildered by false ego, he thinks himself as the doer of the activity which are in actuality carried out by the material nature, by the three modes of material nature. So here the point is, who is the performer of the activity? three modes of material nature. Krishna says, the three modes of material nature. So, blame again goes back to the material nature, svabhava. Here in this verse it is mentioned as the svabhava, as a nature. So the question is the nature all responsible? Krishna says, ahankara vimuthatma karta hamiti mani. He thinks, one who is only bewildered, he thinks he is the cause, he is the performer of all the activities. So that is point number one. Then, there is another verse, it says, even in the fifth chapter, it says, look, actually, material nature, or the person himself, is not the performer, but the cause is Paramatma. Paramatma. The super soul is the cause of all the activities. So the actual performer is the super soul. Now, if you look further in Bhagavad Gita, it says, Karanam guna sangosya sadasat yoni janmasu. So here it says, okay, Karanam, the reason is guna sangosya, that is association of the living entities with the material nature. So that is the ultimate cause. So we are seeing, so okay, one is, and we see that the reaction is awarded for the performer of the activity. The reaction is not given to the material nature. There is no reaction for the Paramatma, and the reaction is awarded to the performer. So the question arises in this question, who is the performer of the activity? Who is the actual performer of the activity? Is it the material nature? Is it the person himself? Or is it Paramatma? Because there are verses pointing to different directions in Bhagavad Gita. So the conclusion is that all are responsible. So it's not that only just one person is responsible. All are responsible. That is, the material nature is responsible. The performer of the activity, he is also responsible. And ultimately, the Supreme Soul is also responsible. So we can see the suffering, or whatever is going through in our life, all three factors are responsible. How? Because we are the one who chooses to act. We are the one who chooses to act. It is our free will, it is our desire that is manifested in the form of action. So there is always a field of activity, there is a kshetra, and in that kshetra, in that field of activity, there are activities being performed by the kshetragya, one who is knower of the field. That is us, the spirit soul. So here, the living entity is desiring to act. Then who is actually performing the activity? Who is performing the activity? Say, if we are moving our hand, who is actually performing the activity?
Self.
Self, you are saying self. Any other opinion? Material nature. Because you are not your hand, correct? I am not my hand. This is just made of three modes of material nature. I am not this body. I am not this mind. So who is actually performing? So according to the desire of the living entity, the performance is being done by the material nature, because I am not this body. So all the activities in actuality is being carried out by the three modes of material nature. Can you see? Directly, we are not doing it. We do desire, but the actions are performed by the material nature. The three modes are actually functioning. They are in action. So yes, in one sense, blame goes to three modes of material nature. Karanam guna sangosya sadasat yoni janmasu. So karanam guna sangosya. Yes, we came in association with the material nature, and now the material nature is doing everything. We are just desiring, and the material nature is doing everything. It is animating all our desires. We want to slap someone, it is animating the whole thing. So in that way, yes, it is being carried out by the material nature. Now, is this material nature or our desire acting independently? No. That's where the Paramatma comes. Because the material nature is present, and there are devatas in control of different material nature. For any material element, there is a corresponding devata in control. And behind those devatas, ultimately who is there? That is Paramatma. Paramatma is present. So Paramatma, one of the features of Paramatma is sustenance, the maintenance. When we say Matasmriti Jnanam Apohanam Cha. From me, remembrance, forgetfulness comes. So it means that for the basic maintenance of the living entities, individually and collectively, and even the maintenance and sustenance of the material nature, that is only possible because of the Paramatma. So that's the reason the Paramatma is addressed as Brahma Samhita says, Andantarastam cha Paramanu Chayantarastam Govindam Adipurisham Tamaham Bhajami. So Paramatma is present, Krishna's plenary portion is present as Sri Radhakachaya Vishnu within the atom and in between the atoms. So that is actually sustaining the material universe. So that is the all-pervading feature of Paramatma. So yes, in one sense, as Ashtavakra says, the all-pervading feature is there for Brahman, the impersonal effulgence, that is all-permeating. It is present everywhere. It is a fact. But what is the reason for all-pervading nature of impersonal Brahma Jyoti? Because when we say Jyoti, when we say light, we can see the all-pervading nature. It is very easy to understand. Because the light, it just spreads. It emanates and it just spreads. It covers the whole place. So when we say Brahma Jyoti, Jyoti in itself means the light. So when we say Brahma Jyoti, it is very easy to understand the all-pervading nature of Brahma Jyoti. So Ashtavakra and the impersonalists, they stop their understanding at that point. So the personalists, the Bhagavad school understand that this all-pervading feature is coming from the all-pervading feature of Paramatma. So Paramatma is all-pervading. That is within the atom and outside the atom. So everywhere, practically speaking, everywhere the Paramatma, the super soul is pervaded. And because of his all presence, there is all effulgence coming from the body of the Paramatma, and that is impersonal Brahman. See? So that is the cause of this effulgence. So yes, so even all this material nature to enact, to animate, as a source of energy, there is Paramatma. And this constant emanation of energy by Paramatma, it can be traced even right from the beginning of creation. Just briefly explaining, we know the creation is by glancing of Karnatakachaya Vishnu into Pradhan. So actually it is said that the glancing, it is going on, the energy is being imparted constantly to the material nature. And that is manifested through the Paramatma, and that energy is carrying forward by the Paramatma, and he is actually maintaining the whole universe. And by his sanction, all this happiness and distress are ultimately awarded, or any actions you perform, there has to be sanction of Paramatma. So we can see he is the ultimate cause in that sense. Now, who is the cause of Paramatma? Krishna, ultimately, that is Krishna. So everything is coming from Krishna. So in that respect, we can see, okay, Krishna is the ultimate cause of everything. He is the ultimate cause of Paramatma. He is the ultimate cause of material nature. He says, Maya Dhyakshana Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam Hetana Anena Kaundaya Jagat Viparthate. So Hetana, and I am the Hetu, I am the reason for both spiritual and material nature. So he is the cause of material nature, he is the cause of spiritual nature. And he is the cause of the living entity himself, because we are only one of the energies of the Lord. So that's where the impersonalists, they come to a wrong conclusion, because they think we are the self-same God, or the process is to realize that our nature as the self-same God. Where Bhagavad Gita makes it very clear in two verses. In the 7th chapter, makes it very clear. It gives a complete perception of the reality. Krishna says, Bhumira, 7th chapter is very important, where Krishna is actually starts speaking continuously, many verses, about himself in detail and about the bhakti process. So in the 7th chapter, he says, Bhumira apa analo vayu khammano buddhirevach ahankara idiyamme bhinna pradhidrashtatha. So he says, Bhumira apa analo vayu, he lists different material nature, starting from earth, water, fire, ether, mind, intelligence, force. He says, all this material nature, these are my inferior energy. So he defines the material nature as his inferior energy. Then moving forward, in the next verse, Krishna says, Aparayam idasanyam prakritim vidhimaparam jivabhuta mahabaho yetan dharyate jagat. But there is a superior energy of mine, which is of higher nature. So see, so these are nothing but Krishna's different energies. So when the impersonalists forget to accept the difference and the union of the energy and the energetic, they come to the wrong conclusion. So the Vaishnava philosophy is based on understanding the difference and the union between the energy and the energetic, Shakti and the Shaktiman. So we say, so the first Vedic reference to this in the Upanishads is Parasya Shaktir Vividheva Shruyate Swabhaviki Jnana Swabhaviki, anyone remember? Swabhaviki Jnana Balakriyacha. That's right. Swabhaviki Jnana Balakriyacha. So the point is, the Lord is composed of, the Lord has multifarious energies. So when one denies this fact, then there is this impersonal philosophy. So when we accept this fact, then there is personal philosophy. So when we accept, then we understand, okay, the Jiva, Jiva Bhuta is only one of the energies of Krishna. It's only one of the energies of Krishna. We are not everything. And there are multifarious energies, which are in generally classified as Antaranga, the internal energies, which is just a classification, just a title, and Bahiranga, the external energies, and then the Tatastha, the marginal energy. So it's a classification of different energies of the Lord. So then we clearly understand that, okay, yes, Krishna is the cause of everything, cause of all causes. Understanding is the cause of Paramatma. Cause of the material nature is the cause of the living entity. However, the blame goes for the living entity. So if there is a happiness or distress, the blame goes for the living entity as the responsible person. Because ultimately he is the one who desires. He is the one who chooses. So even if we say the mind, so there is a very, very significant point is mentioned here, that from quoting from the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, blaming the mind. Very important point. In the Bhagavad Gita 6.5, also it is confirmed that by one's mind, freed from material affection, one can deliver himself from the sufferings of material pangs. So one should not entangle oneself in the matter by the mind's material affection. Thus, one's own mind is one's friend and enemy in one's material happiness and distress. Very important verse. Banthuratmaatmana cheva. You don't remember the full verse? Banthuratmaatmana. So, Banthu, the mind is the friend or the enemy. Banthu is a friend is the mind and enemy is also the mind. That is okay. That is the next point mentioned. Udharet atmanatmanam na atmanam. Which I did. Bandhiratma manastasya, atmanyeva atmana. Is that wrong? Okay, thank you. Bandhu is atma and ripu is also atma, that's the point. Bandhu is the friend and ripu is the enemy. Both are mind. So, explaining this point, it is very. Two things we can say. In fact, in Bhagavatam, in the 11th canto, there is a section of Bhikshu Gita. Bhikshu Gita. Bhikshu means the renunciant. So, who is that renunciant mentioned in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam? Exactly, the Avanti Brahmana. So, Avanti Brahmana, he was completely rejected by his family, and he accepted the position of a bhikshu, a sannyasi, completely renounced sannyasi, and he was in the street. And some people cursed him. Some people blasphemed him, some people spitted at him. You know, people did so many different things and some people praised him. So he was going through material atrocities and some happiness. So he came to, so in the end of Bhikshu Gita, he came to this conclusion. Actually, my cause of my suffering is nothing but the mind. So the Bhagavad Gita also says, the mind is the cause of my suffering. In fact, in one of the famous Vaishnava song of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says the same point. The beginning of the song itself is making the same point. That is, Emana Durmati. Because of my wicked mind, I have come to this material world. In the sense, the wicked mind is keeping me in this material world. See? So the mind is, primarily mind is acting as the enemy. If you consider from the perspective of going back to Godhead, mind is acting as the enemy. So emana durmati, it is durmati, it is wicked. So it is mentioned, okay, here it's the way it is mentioned is very important. We had to see. One should not entangle oneself in the matter by the mind's material affection. Okay, so in this sentence, we had to look at the sentence very carefully. So one should not entangle. So who is this one? Loudly, one person. The self. The one means the self, the Atma. Okay, so the Atma should not entangle oneself in the matters by the mind's material affection. So the mind is conditioned, and it is being conditioned for many lifetimes. And the mind by nature has different attractions and repulsions. It is there. So even when we are devotees, we can see the mind has, because we are coming from the conditioned background, so the mind has, naturally has certain inclinations, certain likes, certain dislikes. We have to acknowledge, yes, it is there. We cannot say the mind is completely clear. No. So if it is clear, it is fine. As Bhagavad Gita says, 6th chapter, if mind is completely clear, one has already reached the realization of the super soul. If mind is completely controlled, then one has already reached the realization of the super soul. So now we haven't realized super soul. We are not seeing everywhere super soul, right? I don't have that vision. So we have, we don't have that vision. So we have to understand the mind is not yet controlled. So now, when the mind is bringing forth so many material affections, we shouldn't go for it. We have to understand we are separate from the mind, and we have to take the help of spiritual intelligence which are coming from the Shastra, and we have to act based on that. So basis of our activity has to be Shastra, which can be equated to spiritual intelligence, and not the affections of the mind, because the mind will have its own affections. We cannot deny that, it will be there. And our primary process there is chanting of Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Chanting of Hare Krishna Mahamantra helps us to neglect the mind. There are different approaches to chanting, but Srila Prabhupada's approach is neglect the mind while chanting. Just focus on chanting. Be busy in service to Krishna, hear Shastra and chant Hare Krishna. In that way, neglect the mind. So Prabhupada never gave a process of bhajana, bhajan process as such. Just focus on bhajan, just focus on the sadhana. Forget the service. But Prabhupada said, we had to be busy in service. So the mind is engaged in service. So why? Because when we are busy with the service, then there is no enough space for the mind to wander. Have you noticed yourself? I have noticed myself. When I am busy with service, I am planning for service, I had to do this, I had to do the other thing. If we are planning for Krishna, then the mind is under control. It will not create so much of disturbance. But when it's an empty mind, then for sure, it will cause disturbance. And on the other side, if we are in a very comfortable situation, that's another point. If we are materially also, if we are very comfortable, then mind usually gives trouble. Why? Because the tendency of the material nature is to degrade. The consciousness natural state, the conditioned state is to degrade. If it is in goodness, it can come to passion, and from passion to ignorance. That is the natural process is degradation. So instead, we have rules and regulations. So these rules and regulations help us to stay at one place. Okay, if you are in goodness, okay, by following, by sticking to rules and regulations, at least stay in goodness. From there, one can make further progress. So our process is very much based on controlling the mind, primarily by neglecting the mind. That is our service and that is our sadhana. And with that, one can make progress. So as a final statement, we saw in this verse different causes for happiness and suffering. So in this verse we saw the self itself, the material nature, the devatas, the action, and ultimately we saw that the ultimate reason is Krishna himself. Krishna is the sarva karana karanam. But in between we saw how the self is responsible for his activities, his desires. Yeah.
So in some might be saying that the mind causes suffering either by proper use or misuse. The thing which made one state is that we deny the mind, no, we give occupational therapy to the mind, that occupational therapy is proper use of the mind.
Yeah.
And the other point you made there, that in fact if we're using it properly and we're chanting what we do a nicely like Prabhupada said and all the world, we're actually in the loka here when we're doing properly and we're serving properly. So if we're serving properly and we're doing those, we're actually in the spiritual world doing it right there. So this is occupational therapy is in that. So this is how we reach the loka while we're still even in the body. But we're actually here serving and doing properly, we're also in the loka.
Thank you. Yes.
In one sense, you said that the super soul is self pervading as in the atom everywhere. But at the same time, we also know that we say that material nature is inert.
Yeah.
Not alive.
Yeah.
So how do I understand that super soul is there, but at the same time, material nature is
inert? Material nature is inert. That is a fact. It's inert. At the same time, it is animated. It is working. It is sustained. It is, this table is, you know, it is as one piece. So how is it possible to have a proper shape or form or activity even for the material nature? Who is actually sustaining that? So that is being done by the energy of the super soul. We, of course, we differentiate between animate and inanimate based on the presence of soul as such, but at the same time, we do understand that super soul is required for anything to be in its natural state, to function in its natural capacity, even for the inner nature. To function at, in its natural capacity, the presence of super soul is required. It is equally applicable to the living entities, because even though we say, okay, the body is animated by the living force, by the spirit soul, but the super soul is the soul of the soul. So without the super soul, even the soul, even we cannot function. Is that clear? So, in any nature, in any case, whether an animate object or inanimate object, to function in its natural capacity, the presence of super soul is required. Is that?
Does that mean that we're just, our soul is just a product of the inferior nature of Krishna?
We? Our body is the product of inferior.
Our soul?
No, it is part of the superior nature of Krishna.
Superior
nature of Krishna. So, 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita says, inferior nature is the inanimate objects, earth, water, fire, either mind, intelligence, force, ego. So that is the inferior. Next verse says, no, the superior nature, that is the living entity. Because, why? Because Krishna is of the nature of Satchidananda, he is of the nature of eternality, bliss, and knowledge. And same with the living entity, we are also of the same nature.
Is that not then, if we're part of this superior nature, does that not all go back to everything being the cause from Krishna?
Everything?
Everything. You said earlier that Krishna is the ultimate cause, but we control our desires and actions.
Yeah.
But if our desires and actions come from our spirit soul, then our spirit soul is the superior nature of Krishna, then does it all not come from Krishna?
All not come
from our desires and actions come from Krishna.
Yeah, ultimately everything is ultimately everything is coming from Krishna. So that is the reason we say Krishna is Sarva Karana Karana. Ultimately, if you go back, the ultimate, everything is coming from Krishna. But at the same time, for living entities, there is something which is giving, Krishna is giving something which is known as the free will. A small independence, a small free will. So with that free will, we can desire. So since Krishna is sanctioning and Krishna is giving that free will, from that independence we are getting the desire. So in one sense we can say Krishna is the ultimate cause, but we have our part too. We cannot deny completely our responsibility. Then why are we suffering? Why there is a karma cycle? If we don't have, if we are not responsible, we are held responsible, so there is happiness and suffering. If we are not responsible at all for anything, then there is no point in karma as such. So it's a twofold thing. That is, yes, we have our part and Krishna has his part. And ultimately everything is Krishna's. Everything is, the whole plan is ultimately is Krishna's. Yep, let Prabhu, yeah, oh. poor.
Oh.
Yeah.
So ultimately it comes back to our proper use or our misuse of that little bit of independence that Krishna gives us.
That's right. Thank you. Okay.
How does it relate to Krishna consciousness?
Karma Mimamsa. Karma Mimamsa, actually it is not very much related to Krishna consciousness. It is independent. The reason is, okay, there are some similarities we could say, because at least there is some kind of acknowledgement to superior beings. Acknowledgement. Second similarity is that, okay, one has to be careful about one's activity. These are the two similarities we can draw from Karma Mimamsa to Krishna consciousness. But the differences are more prominent. So the differences are, one is, it's not really taking into consideration the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord is not there. So, you know, it is a huge difference. And in Krishna consciousness, We have the opportunity to perform bhakti because of causeless mercy, right? We say causeless mercy. What is the meaning of causeless mercy?
We don't have any qualification.
Exactly. We don't have any qualification. It means it's not that we have performed some activity so that we are getting this opportunity to perform devotional service. Point number one. Second, Krishna awards mercy causelessly because there is no reason as such. So he can just give. So we, you know, many things happen in our life, it is, you know, out of causeless mercy. Sometimes, you know, we are able to chant Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Sometimes we feel, okay, I can, you know, chant a few rounds with full attention or, you know, good attention. I can listen to everything. It is mercy of the Lord. Maybe, you know, one day back, my thoughts and my actions were completely opposite. But now I am able to do something good. We are able to do some service which are beneficial for ourselves and beneficial for others, where the causeless element of mercy of Krishna is coming through. So this is a key factor in a devotee's life, in a Krishna conscious life. It's a key factor. And we do acknowledge the mercy of Krishna as the highest power, the highest Shakti. Krishna has many Shaktis, but Kripa Shakti is considered very high. You know, the highest Shakti, Kripa Shakti, is mercy potency. So when we deny all these kind of things, then, you know, we can see, practically speaking, there is no common things in it, it's very minimal. So we don't say so much of, you know, okay, so much to take from Karma Mimamsa to our life as such, our Krishna conscious life as such. Yeah.
Just on that purpose, so the reason why he spoke on those lines to Nanda Maharaj was because Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Maharaj didn't consider Krishna as the supreme, and that's the reason he actually spoke on those lines, right, to dissuade them from worshipping him, right?
So, you know, it's a pastime. And in golden pastime, there are many reasons for this pastime. So, Krishna used different theories. He used different theories to, as he said, to distract them from the Indra worship. And he gave another reason also. He quoted another philosophy also explaining, okay, everything is coming from Rajas. The passion, the mode of passion. The mode of passion is a kind of jnana. The mode of passion is influencing the clouds. And with that, the cloud is evaporating and the rain is pouring down because of the mode of passion, because of heat. It is actually causing the cloud to melt and it is pouring as the waters, the rain water. So he gave different philosophies, not just one. So that ultimately Krishna wanted few things to achieve. One, he didn't want Indra worship to happen. And also, so it's just a demigod worship that is not just for the Nanda Maharaj, and it is to show us that demigod worship is not required. Second, he wanted to cut down the pride of Indra, because Indra was very proud, so he wanted to cut down that. He wanted to give him a lesson. Then, he also wanted to start Govardhan Puja. He wanted to establish the worship of Govardhan. And not only that, he wanted to show that he is actually the Supreme Lord. Krishna is the Supreme Lord. So all this he achieved through this. So he actually deluded in oneself, Nanda Maharaj, from his puja, and from that he actually gave something which is high superior. And ultimately, in Bhagavatam says, Krishna himself accepted all the offerings of all the Brajavasis in the form of Govardhan. He assumed a huge form and accepted, meaning showing that he himself is Govardhan, and he accepted everything, all the offerings. So he actually elevated that Indra worship to the worship of the Supreme Lord. So.
You also say that Krishna preaches according to time, place, and circumstance.
Yeah.
Getting the mercy from Krishna, getting the mercy from Krishna,
in
the one side,
yeah.
And in our routine life, there may be happiness or with distress feeling. So is it based on the Purva Karma or the past karma?
Okay, yeah, Purva Karma, that is a good point. Purva Karma has kind of, we are not pure devotees yet, right? So the Purva Karma has some influence on our current life. So to the degree to which we are Krishna conscious, we are not really influenced by the Purva Karma. Otherwise, the previous karma can influence us to some degree. However, if your devotee is practicing sadhana bhakti, chanting for 16 rounds and following four regulated principles, so if we sincerely take shelter of Krishna, so the karmic patterns which are coming into our life are not just karma, but they are karma used by Krishna to purify us. So, it is karma used by Krishna to purify us. So he can change. If he thinks more suffering you want to give, okay, he will give more suffering. If you want to reduce some suffering, you will reduce some suffering. Accordingly. He will give accordingly.
So if we perform the devotional service from the heart of hearts, very strictly or very with love and affection, the post-karmas, past-karmas will be nullified?
Yeah, past-karma is nullified, there is no doubt. Past-karma is completely nullified. As you know, in I was hearing a lecture of Srila Prabhupada on 1.1.1 Srimad Bhagavatam. So there was one answer to one question, same question. What will happen to, when can we actually get rid of all our karmas? Prabhupada said, you can get rid of all the karmas in 1 minute. How long it takes? The question was, how long it takes? Prabhupada said, 1 minute, you can get rid of all your karmas. Prabhupada said, you know, sarva dharman paritejamamekam sharanam rajaham tvam sarvabhavepyo mokshekshyami mashicha. He said, okay, that's it. You know, you surrender to me in 1 minute. It takes only 1 minute. That's what Srila Prabhupada said. Very forcefully. Just 1 minute, your karma is gone. So, yes, of course, karma is gone. But still, we shouldn't accept always, you know, material happiness. That's not the teaching of Bhagavad Gita.
So, we should maintain the same line. When we
have happiness or distress, we have to serve Krishna.
Past karmas are nullified. We should have a state level. We should not be part of ourselves to dwell in the material nature.
Yeah, we shouldn't. The thing is, the karmic influences, or in other words, the material distress and material happiness will come to a devotee's life. So there can be material tribulations or materially favorable situations. That will be there in our life. Now, we shouldn't identify with both of the situations. So the whole Bhagavad Gita is talking about equanimity, being equipoised. Meaning, we don't get affected by material enjoyment or suffering. Rather, we do perform devotional activity. That is our steadiness. So our steadiness is in Krishna consciousness, not in the external circumstances. That can be upside down. We can't do much about it. We can't do much about it, yeah. Yeah,
we should end
here. Yeah. Okay. Then maybe afterwards we can ask. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Yantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki Srila Prabhupada ki Jai Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bhagavatam.